Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
So the last time I remember seeing you, or I don't know if we actually saw you that morning, I know we were texting, was down at the duck pond. And this was because it was like the week before we bumped into each other at the parking lot, and you and your wife were heading in early in the morning for a duck hunt. And Ruger and I were too. And then there was like the weekend or two weekends later, you were already down, I think, on the far corner when we came down in the dark. And I remember you were texting me sort of like, hey, is that you over there? Because you'd heard a shot. And I was like, yes, it was. And then a little while later in the morning, it was like over on your side, it was like, boom, 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 boom. And boom, 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 boom. And then I'm like, holy smokes, why are all the ducks going over there? And then
it was a productive
I'll
morning.
Get this text from you. I remember this. And you're like, it was like, just in case you're wondering, I got a couple of friends down that have never duck hunted before. It's their first time or whatever. So, and I'm like, I was recording a field podcast, and I'm like, well, that the microphone's picking up all of those boom, 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 boom in the background.
Sounded like like a new war going on or something. Yeah, no, that was actually, it was fun because it kind of helped keep the birds bouncing around a little bit. And I think that first morning we bumped into each other, I felt a little bad because it felt like they were really kind of piling in that side. And like, we got three geese that morning there, which was stellar. And then, but I know when you got a new pup and stuff like that, it's a lot of work. It can be a little tricky to try to like have the training, especially when you're by yourself.
That was a good morning. I think it turned out well for me, but I think I was telling you earlier this fall, like that poor little duck pond was pretty much a mud flat this year. Like that point where you guys were off of there, we were sitting there one morning and there was a coyote pair came out and we're wandering around in the mud flat right where you guys it was dry. It was not good. So
No, and I wonder, we just moved, so I didn't get a chance to poke around out there at all. But like you were saying, we were texting back and forth a little bit. It sounded like you felt like the migration kind of changed a bit because of the drought and like the change in the water out there.
Yeah, either two things, because lots of those little duck ponds were dry. And so birds just went elsewhere this past year or last year, or else just the big northern flights didn't come down later in the year because it took a long time for things to freeze up north. And December, I was still not seeing like big flocks. And I think when they did move through, they just were like, this high flew right over into the States and kept right on going. So cool.
Yeah, no, it was a different year for sure. Like it was colder in October than it was in December.
It was a weird year. So So everybody, this is Levi Leyenhorst. We were just discussing the different pronunciations of your last name, whether it's Leyenhorst or Leyenhorst. So you were okay with either.
Yeah, I'm pretty easygoing usually.
Do you ever, geez, like, sort of, how come we didn't have like a simple name when you were like a little kid? Because my parents gave me three first names, and that was like, that's a pain.
Yeah, no, this comes up a lot because apparently they shortened it from Von Leyenhorst to Leyenhorst. And I'm like, man, we could have done a lot better than that and maybe just gone with Horst or something like that. Or, you know, my Oma and Opa, like, I guess I'm third generation or second generation Canadian. My Oma and Opa moved over here when they were 20, took the boat over, and then had their family, had a dairy farm out in Salmon Arm, well, Lower Mainland, then Salmon Arm, and then but apparently they did shorten it up, but I don't think they did quite a good enough job because it's still quite a mouthful.
I think folks nowadays are getting, you know, used to pronouncing folks' names, even first names that are like not traditional names like that I grew up with and stuff. So I think it's just becoming part of.
You see a lot of hyphenated names too.
Yeah. From marriages and just more, you know, from when we were little to now, like the different people who are in our friend circle and at work and stuff that are from different areas of the country. It's like you're learning how to pronounce all different types of names. So yeah, it's kind of cool. So now this is going to be a really interesting conversation for me. You are a hunter, and as a profession, you are also, or you are an RN, a registered nurse. So this is super fascinating for me. And this is, I think, where I want to kind of get to know kind of your thoughts of these two things. And are they like, is being a hunter something very, very separate from your work? Or do you find like, or do you go hunting while you're at work or no? Like what I mean is so being in the medical profession, like being a nurse in a hospital, different thing, you know, like they're busy days during COVID, like stressful, you know, work environment. Is hunting an escape for you? Like where you just completely like leave one world to forget about it? Or are you able to bring things from like your profession to your hunting field? Like, hey, this is something, a way I've learned to think or prioritize things. Or is there something about being a hunter where you're like, hey, I have these certain skill sets from what I do as a hunter that actually helps me think better and make decisions as a nurse? Like,
yeah, you know,
tell me about your world.
You bring a lot of good, yeah, that's a lot to try to unpack a little bit, and some things that I've never really thought about. And I would say largely yes.
Yes to everything. End of the show. You know, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. That's the easy answer. There we go. We can end it there. I do critical care ground transports. I work for what's called the high acute response team, excuse me, for interior health. So, it's critical care ER. We're basically an ICU on wheels. Sometimes you work alone. Sometimes we have a respiratory therapist with us, and then we team up with some paramedics. And then anybody basically needing a care level higher than what the, paramedics in the region here can offer, then we will take them and try to basically the goal, keep physicians and nurses in the rural sites. And then we bring these sicker patients to where they need to go for a higher level of care and try to bring ICU basically to the rural sites. So we get into, you never really know what you're going to get into. You basically get the phone call and then it's, you know, the pager goes off and then get up and boogie, make a plan, figure out the logistics and then go. So we can get into some pretty interesting scenarios, situations that can be pretty stressful. That you have to unpack later. And so, yeah, I would say hunting definitely is an arena where I go to unpack a lot of that stuff. We don't really, I mean, we talk about what we do at work kind of in work, but we're sort of encouraged not to really, for privacy reasons, try to unpack those things with people outside work too much. I mean, some do, you know, I'll talk to my wife and stuff like that, but especially working in these rural sites, rural environments, it doesn't take a whole lot to sort of start breaching or having folks figure out maybe who you're talking about. You know, we got, 65,000 people that live in the West Kootenays, another 65,000 in the East Kootenays. It's pretty small, really. So the hunting is definitely a spot there. It's sort of just, it's something completely different. But then there's skills, you know, we, like, every day, everything that we do is so priority focused and driven. And hunting goes that way a lot, too. Now, the adrenaline change, though, sometimes, like, it's, I guess it can, hunting can be quite slow and you really need to slow down and try to absorb everything that's going on around you. But then it changes gears really quick too, right? And, you know, that's where I was enjoying duck hunting so much lately, because I'm a bit of an extrovert and I just was finding that at work, you know, we'll talk. There's quite a few people that hunt in the region, you know, West Kootenays, East Kootenays. That's sort of where I've been based for the last 8 years now. Grew up in Salmon Arm, went to school in Kamloops. Like, it's a lot of blue collar folks, a lot of folks that like to be outside, spend a lot of time outside, and a lot of patients that I transport. You know, I might have 4 hours on the road with these folks, and there's really, really good folks that have just been out in the bush for their whole lives that you start picking their brain, they start talking about food. That's probably my biggest passion is the food side, especially when you start getting hungry. You start getting hungry and you start talking.
Typical hunter, like, you know, it's like you're at work and the guy's in the ambulance, he's got an IV on it and has like got a couple hours and it's like, so you like hunting? And then next year you're talking all these hunting stories and the driver's like, we're here. And you're like, oh, just a minute. There was this time and they're like, the doctors are waiting. It's like, sort of seems to be like a typical hunter conversation.
Yeah. No, it's good. Like, yeah, it's nice to sort of like just build that relationship with their patients and stuff like that and try to like make the experience that they're having, because a normal day for me is somebody else's worst day in their life, basically. That's kind of a common thing that we try to keep in mind, that we can sort of like kind of lose focus or track of, you know, the weirdness of things that we do in our job, basically. It's just kind of normal for me now, and then you got to think that like this is brutal for the other person. So it's nice when we get those ones that are, you know, you're able to kind of just like distract them from what's going on. They just had a major heart attack. It might change the, you know, trajectory of the rest of their life or something like that. And, you know, just kind of intertwine a few things. So yeah, it's kind of neat that way. That's probably my favorite part of the job, is having those interactions and stuff with a lot of folks and just getting to know, you know, people that have been doing, come from all different types of walks of life and stuff like that, especially when has to do with the outdoors. Cool. Here. So, yeah.
You know, it's probably for a lot of folks, like you're saying, you kind of like unpack things when you're hunting, because sometimes I find like just, you know, you sit under a tree or you climb to the top of a ridge with a view or whatever. And it's like, sometimes there's like a day of hunting has less to do with a day of hunting than it's just like you literally need to have that day where you sit on the top of a mountain to contemplate your life or sure, you know, or something or for whatever. Sure.
And that's especially the backcountry. That's where the backcountry hunting really drew me in, where it's just, you're really seeing animals and wildlife, and just, it's a more serene space setting. It's more challenging for yourself, kind of removes you from the day-to-day stuff. Phone's not dinging off or anything like that. And you're just seeing animals, you know, undisturbed, kind of doing their thing and then working that angle. And it's a lot different than when you're, you know, in a really busy area where animals are getting bumped around all over the place and you're just kind of catching them in those quick transitions, trying to bolt from one opening to the other and whatnot. So, I mean, and we're pretty fortunate living where we do, right? Where there's a lot of hunters out here, but not in the densities that compared, especially in the States and whatnot, where, you know, it's just so competitive. You can go 500 meters off the road and not see another person in a lot of the places that we go to, sort of thing, right? So, pretty amazing. That's why my wife and I, like, we moved down here. Well, my wife grew up in Trail, but we moved to the East Kootenays originally because we wanted bigger mountains, more sunshine, and more wildlife. And that was, by golly, we got it. It was amazing. And now we're living in the West Kootenays in Trail now, because that's where my wife grew up. And we've got a little one and a family here, and then another one coming in April. So it's nice having the family supports out here and being around the cousins and stuff. It's kind of a new phase. it's a, man, it's crazy how different the landscape is here from the East Kootenays, though. Like, it's kind of like taking me a bit to wrap my head around.
Very, very, very different. Yeah, yeah, and different, different mountains, different geology, and everything. So, I mean, it's kind of cool to see different, mm-hmm. different parts of the country, and both like
for sure,
in your hunting for sure. pursuits, and I'm sure work wise as well. Like, it's, you know, different things, different yeah. people, different communities, and whatnot. Do you get a chance to talk much at work? Like, you know, I don't know what it's like, you know, working in your type of field, but, you know, do you get a chance to chit chat with your coworkers, what you were on the weekend? And do very many people in the medical field hunt? Like, it's like, that's an honest question.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few and it's been really fun to actually, you know, I'm still getting to know a lot of the folks out here. I work independently a lot of the time. We're based out of the hospital, and slowly over time, been getting to know folks more and more. I would say the densities are a little bit, hunters in the hospital here, probably a little bit less than in like Cranbrook. a lot of backcountry enthusiasts, like for mountain biking, skiing, that kind of stuff for sure. But I've met some of the paramedics, nurses, physicians. And you know, it's fun when you start, like, I mean, I get pretty passionate about this stuff, and especially talking about the full shebang, right? Like, you're going out, learning animal behaviors, spending time in the bush, and then harvesting an animal, processing, breaking that animal down, bringing it home, then breaking it down further, getting it in your freezer. And like, especially when you're packing them out, it's like, I'm cutting into a steak. It's like, there's one step sort of thing. It's like, you earn it, and there's nothing like you really like it. It just makes you appreciate it that much more when you're like going the full unit on it. And a lot of people really appreciate, I think, especially if they don't have a great grasp of, maybe they have a bit of an inkling, or they're wanting to be more connected to their food or something like that. And then you start having these conversations, and then they're like, man, like, I'd love to get out sometime with you or something. And then like, there's been many, many interactions that way where there's, just lighten that little, you got a spark, and I'm just kind of, you're helping coax that a little bit, and, getting people a little bit more interested in being engaged, you know, with the wilderness that way. Cause there's a lot of people that are really into the backcountry right now. But they don't really appreciate or understand the interactions or the way that we're spending time in there, where like, if I'm out there looking for animals and recognizing when I'm not seeing animals versus someone that might just be out there for a hoot and a holler sort of thing and see a beautiful landscape or see an area and not necessarily understand like the different disturbances or impacts of how we, you know, can interplay and spend time there that might actually still impact wildlife. But you're not noticing that because you're not actually looking for that wildlife. You know what I mean? So it's in, I think it's an important thing right now, even if a person doesn't really plan to pursue harvesting game, or maybe they want to a bit, and for their passions are still more on the recreational side of things. And I guess I'm maybe diving a little bit, going a bit of a tangent, but this just is something that I'm kind of noticing. But it's great to have people just, I think, still have an appreciation for getting that education for the impacts of our different, the way we spend our time in the backcountry, really. There's a huge push right now for having, I don't know if we want to go delve down this avenue or not, Mark, but I love spending time in the backcountry, and I want people to know the impacts that we all have when we're back there. And that, I think it's really exciting right now, especially with the technology that we have right now, to be able to do some really interesting research to see the different interplays that we all have in animal, you know, movement and what, you know, habitat impacts and stuff like that, whether it's, you know, timber harvest, recreational backcountry experiences with heli, biking, skiing, all this kind of stuff. Hiking and hunting and stuff, we're all out there appreciating those spaces. And I know for me, like, as people learn more about what we have out there, it all comes at a cost. And if we're all using it, then hopefully we all eventually like contribute to making sure that those areas stay pristine. I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at. And I've had many, many I've had a lot of conversations with folks at work that way, that that sort of like, oh, like it's sort of like a light bulb goes off a little bit, and then they can become an advocate for making sure that the things stay that way, not just having a great trail to be able to hike up or bike down or anything like that, but also having the animals and the spaces that still are that were there, you know, at the same time, and hopefully still thriving and whatnot, because there's a lot that's been changing in so many ways that pretty interesting stuff.
It's interesting when you start to talk to, you know, folks at, you know, especially at work, and that maybe they're not hunters, but they're, you know, hikers and backcountry skiers and mountain bikers and stuff. Like you said, that's pretty common in, you know, our part of the world and a lot of areas, and it's growing, and they see hunting as being a thing that's like contrary to conservation or stewardship of the land, where something like mountain biking, they're like, well, we're not killing any animals.
Yeah. On the surface anyway. Right. And then you start having a conversation, and then it's like, oh, okay. And that's where like your podcast is being so powerful, is the hunter conservationist. It's been, you know, it's a very eye-opening, mind-opening sort of conversation for people to understand, like how, all these conversations that we're having right now, I think is great. And I commend and applaud you for.
No, cool. Appreciate that. And it's like, I think yourself and everybody that has those conversations, whether they're at work or with, you know, friends or something, it's great when hunters are educated and then they kind of like insert themselves into those conversations to be sort of like, let's just talk about the displacement of wildlife from busy mountain bike trails, you know, these sorts of things. And then, like you said, light bulbs go off, you know, when you're talking to people. And I think that's awesome, because it makes this beautiful connection between the things that they care about and folks' perceptions of hunters, when hunters are the ones that are having these conversations about things, like you said, like about impacts or, you know, these sorts of things. And people are like, oh, geez, never didn't realize that. Right. And I think that's, I don't know, part of our role, I guess, as hunters to have those conversations.
For sure. No, for sure. And it took me a long time to like really be able to like articulate, I guess, what was like in my mind on this stuff. And that's where years and probably fuddling a lot of conversations too, where I feel like I'm finally able to like kind of like engage in a really, really productive conversation on this type of stuff. And but it takes time and effort and you know, reading and conversation really to kind of get your head straight on what's out there. And but yeah, it's really interesting to see, you know, some of the different research coming out on a lot of just landscape impacts from all things, you know, highways.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep on top of as a hunter, that's for sure.
For sure, especially when you don't work in that niche, right? Like I'm not a wildlife biologist, I'm not working in the timber industry or something like that. So this is all like
you're staying up on the medical research and stuff for your job, and then on top of the wildlife stuff for your personal interests. So it's
But it's the beautiful thing though, is like, you know, being able to like access those different things like through the internet and whatnot, and sort of educate yourself on something that's a passion. Otherwise it's just hearsay and whatnot. So it is nice to kind of have those actual articles that you can pull up and get from the government websites and like, you know, from the states as well. Like they got lots of stuff. Wyoming's been doing so much work on migration patterns and what have you. And then, you know, some of the different collaring research with mule deer and stuff here, like it's some really, really interesting stuff that we wouldn't have known before, you know, radio collars and all this. Yeah.
No, it's great. Great to see someone like yourself, like being aware of those things, because they do come up in conversations for sure. Now with your work and young family, like you said, you have another one on the way. How is your opportunities to hunt like changing? Like there's got to be times where after work it's just like, man, I'm just like exhausted, but I really wanted to go out and do this thing on Saturday or your day off, and it's like I'm so tired, and you know, you got little kids and more on the way and stuff. Like how is that changing for you, or how has you know, your ups and down days, work shifts affected, like your hunting opportunities, really.
For sure. Yeah, I think this is something that pretty much any new parent can relate to, obviously, right? But like, I'm a task oriented guy, and like on days off, like that was the sweet thing with this job is I work shift work, right? So it was like 2 days, two nights. You have a changeover between your day shifts and your night shifts that you could get out, and then you have 4 to 5 days off between your sets. So prior to children, like I was going out and I was probably getting, I don't know, 45 days of hunting in a fall or something like that, which is pretty extraordinary, I think, for, yeah, now that's gone down a lot, like, especially this year with us moving, starting a new job, being in a new area, and we're just kind of focused, gears have changed a lot. I think I got out hunting like 4 days, maybe 5 days this fall. And I'm okay with that. Like, and we knew that coming here, like this was going to be a lot different. Now Willem, our son, he's going to be 2 in March. I took him black bear hunting actually when he was 2 months old. We got one with a friend of mine, which was pretty awesome. Like we still get out. It's just very different. And that's where it's like, but I know the time that I invest now and like the extra effort and work that it is right now is going to pay dividends when he's older, right? Like if I throw him in the pack carrier behind me, he understands like, but that lasts for about 2 minutes. So it's like, I either need a really dumb or a really deaf deer if I'm taking him deer hunting. I was going to take him actually duck hunting this fall because he likes having the earmuffs on and stuff like that. So with our dog, like I can go puddle jumping and stuff like that. And he's stoked, like he loves the shotgun. He's got his own little plastic one and stuff. And like that works okay. But it's it's a lot of work. And like, you know, do you wake them up early and then have their like day disrupted and then them being moody and then how do you figure out that? Like it's a challenge. But with my wife and I, like our thing has always been like we want this to be a family activity. Brooke, my wife, she grew up in a hunting family. Like she and she's very appreciative of where her food comes from. Like, you know, she loves gardening. She had never harvested an animal. Like she got her hunting license 3 years ago. And it was like a big thing for her to like, for like, okay, like to take, she loves animals, but like for her to actually harvest her first animal, she did really well. It was like, she got a buck and it was, it's really cool because she's so appreciative of like that life cycle. And so she takes time to like pause and like, you know, I like right away, I'm like, okay, like let's get going. Like this is how we process it, blah, blah, blah. She's like, no, like I just want to like stop, pause here and just appreciate, you know, what this animal is giving to us, which I so love how she kind of rounds that side out with our family. And I think our kids are going to really benefit from having all of this. So yeah, the next several years are going to be a challenge. So we know, you know, if we're going, we're wanting to do like a family elk camp every year, hopefully where we can grab a trailer or set up a wall tent or whatever and spend 5 nights out, or something. And it'll be like, maybe I go for a morning. We're not going to be going super deep or anything like that, but it's like getting them out, having them see some stuff, get some experiences. So it's like, yeah, if I can get one multi night in a year for the next 5 years, I'm pretty happy. And then I'll sneak out for some half days here and there, and then that's good. But I, you know what? I've been enjoying the simplicity, like stripping things back. You know, between COVID and where we're shut down to a lot of this isolation and stuff, and then starting our family, it really made me like pause and think about what I like, reflect on my values and what's really important to me, what I really want to spend my time doing, because there's a lot less time, a lot less free time now. So it's, I've appreciated the intentionality that has spurred, in ourselves, and hunting has remained to be one of the pinnacle things for that. And especially
that's awesome. That's so awesome. Yeah.
We were fortunate. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to see, I mean, our kids might not have any interest in going out hunting, and that's okay, but I do want them to appreciate and what's out there, and what we have for opportunity. And just yeah, to appreciate that space and not be afraid of it. But you know, to know where the food comes from, and if they, as long as they're making kind of conscious choices and stuff like that, and not just being oblivious. And I think that's really where the hunting comes in. Mostly it's just that, taking that quiet space, being connected, feeling small. Like when you're out there on top of a mountain, I think, you know, hiking in the dark with a pack of meat on your back, and you're like, yeah, my life could get snuffed out in 2 seconds, whether I take a bad tumble or you got a bear come down on you or something like that. Like, we spend too much time feeling like we're conquering the world, you know, in this like modern technological stage that we're in right now, that you, when you strip it out and you're out there, especially by yourself, you feel very vulnerable. And I think that's something a lot of people are lacking, is that, you know, we're not the top end of the food chain or anything like that. And yeah, so I look forward to doing all of that with the family, and the fact that I'm not doing as much right now is fine. We were fortunate. We got an elk in September. So the freezer's stocked up, and we've got lots of ranches out here. You know, we picked up a half of beef and stuff. Like, food's not an issue. And like, you know, hunting nowadays, like, yeah, food is so readily available everywhere. And that's why this conversation about like, why do we hunt? And it's that food connection, right? And, you know, we eat meat. I feel great when I eat meat. So I'm going to keep eating meat, but I want to know where it comes from and all that kind of stuff. Yep. Right? So, that's kind of the gist. So
it's so refreshing to kind of see like the family values, you know, that you have. And, like that's great. You know, you both hunt and, you know, it's, yeah. And it's like you temper what you do, your focus changes, you're not, you know, backpacking it away as much or whatever, because your focus is having your kids out there. And I remember those days. It's like,
yeah, I mean, you've been there, right, Mark? You've been there before.
Sort of like by the time they wake up and you get their snowsuits on or whatever, it's 10 in the morning, and you know, by all they want to do is build a campfire and cook hot dogs, and then by
hot dogs.
And then by one, it's like, well, we're done, let's go home. And it's like, you know, so that your whole hunting trips turn out to be like three, four hours, but that's what happens when they're toddlers. And then you get,
and that's, as long as you have your expectations set to understand, like if I'm going out with him, I am not expecting to even see anything. So if we do, that's a bonus. If we harvest something, that's a double bonus. You know what I mean? And then that's like super, super, super exciting. Like, yeah. So yeah. And I think a lot of, I don't know, some people can maybe just end up with some false expectations about where you're at. But like, I want our kids to have good memories about, like, there's going to be some suffering, right? Like, there's going to be some cold. We got hand warmers and stuff, but like, that's part of human life. It's like, you know, good things come after you suffer through a few things and whatnot. And it makes you appreciate those things more. And like, maybe, you know, type two fun is like definitely going to be, you know, some hobby stuff that we're doing as a family. And yeah, but you got to make it fun.
You're going to do great with kids. So, I mean, I think kids are so just programmed to be in the outdoors and get dirty and explore and climb and look and see things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think kind of those primal things that are in hunting, I think it's just part of who a kid is, you know, right? And I think if we encourage that out of them, they'll leave that stuff behind. But if we, as hunting families, embrace that, I think we've already got little humans that are like, they're yearning for that. They want that. That's filling the psyche of being human. So I think, you know, the whole idea is like, you might raise your kids, you might be doing that, then they might decide when they're growing up, they don't want to hunt. I've never seen numbers or anything, but I'm probably thinking the chances are pretty low. If you grew up in a hunting family and you're a little kid and you've tapped into that, it's like, it's probably going to be part of, you know, your kids' lives, like, well into the future, and their kids kind of thing. So I just, yeah, unless a family like just up and moves from the country to the big city and has to completely abandon it, I don't know. I just kind of think if kids grow up in it, like, they're, that's a part of who they are.
I mean, that's largely what got me involved with, I mean, I've stepped back almost entirely just with this new phase we're in right now. But when I was pretty heavily involved with backcountry hunters and anglers, especially in these Kootenays there. And I just reflect on when I went to university and stuff. Cause like, even if you grow up in the country, like there's quite a lot of kids end up going to the big city for a period of time. And being able, and then kind of like have this like 4-year phase where you're sort of just like totally dialed into the city and studies and college classes and stuff. Like I got out a little bit still when I was in university, but it was like definitely not a focus, and that was okay. It was a different phase, right? But you know, the collegiate programs with backcountry hunters and anglers and just the conservation lens and like just by and large, like habitat. Like for my kids, whether they stay, you know, we're probably going to always stay just more rural. If they end up in the city and whatnot, like, I just hope that spark still stays alive so that they have that experience. And it's just not daunting if they want to tap into it. Sure. Like if you go to the Lower Mainland, yeah, you're going to have a drive. And that's the beauty of where we live here is like you go 5 minutes and you're pretty much in it. But, if they've had that exposure and that inkling still kicking around, then hopefully they're still pursuing that later on, even if it comes in ebbs and flows, right? So
they'll be off at university and you'll be texting them about all the bulls that you heard bugling or whatever, and they'll be like, "God damn."
That's right. Yeah, just making sure. Yeah. It'll be call them at 5 a.m. and like, can you hear it? Dad, I'm trying to sleep. I got an exam today. It's like, well,
no, it sounds like you got everything on the right path.
Well, I don't know. We all have our different journeys, but we're trying to figure out what ours is, you know, gonna look like and kind of just, yeah, go along with it. So
good job. No, it's been great chatting, great catching up with you, and keep it up, man. Look after yourself. I mean, you're putting your family first and getting out there hunting, and you're being an ambassador for all of hunting at work and stressful environment of being a medical practitioner, and people know you're a hunter, you're a good person, and you know, and using the powers of that, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, to kind of relate and comfort, you know, some of your patients who come from this lifestyle, right? Like that's an amazing skill set, you know, to be able to connect with people from where you live, you know, like that, and do a better job. So it just sounds like you're just an amazing person and doing an amazing job on all fronts of your life.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
as a hunter, making the world a better place at both work and at home for your family. So huge shout out to you for that.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much for the compliment. That's much appreciated.
Cool, man. Thanks. And we'll stay in touch. Maybe on the duck pond next year when we got some water, you can make a trip over here. So
yeah,
I'll know it's you with your friends when I hear all the extra shooting. So yeah, that's good. It's good fun. If you're going to take someone out that hasn't hunted before, I think duck hunting is like the best thing to take them out, because at least you're going to get a whole lot of action and get to make some noise and stuff and be like, "Oh, I almost got him."
For sure. I tell them that all the time. Like, I guess we already kind of said bye, but like, you're 100% right. Like I've said that to so many folks, you know, getting them out, even experienced hunters. Like I brought my brother-in-law duck hunting for the first time. And he had a blast. Like, you know, he loves big game hunting, but we're out there and just like, it was like, we got a mule deer, packed it out. We were having a switchover day, kind of we were going to head out to another spot. I was like, let's go duck hunting. Let's get the dog out. We just gotten Nuka, our duck dog, and like went out, and we got in 2 hours, we had, you know, 7 birds or whatever. It was the first day out. We were a little rusty, shot a lot of rounds, but like, yeah, it was fun. Like I say, it's like no different than what we're doing right now, pretty much, other than you're sitting in a blind and then you got birds coming in once in a while. Like it is good for the social interaction and being able to actually talk and teach to especially new hunters, being able to talk and teach, or
100% it's a great way
and stuff. Like that's what I was getting at at the start of the conversation, I was saying, like, as, you know, for me being an extrovert, the duck blind's great for me to be able to catch up with my buddies, you know, outside of work and stuff. Cause if I'm going mule deer hunting, if you're driving somewhere and maybe you got a bit of time in the truck where you're kind of like sleepily kind of chin wagging a bit, but then it's like, hey, like, okay, you go that way, I'm going to go this way. Unless you're sitting there glassing, like you're being quiet, creeping around the bush and whatnot. And then you get back to camp or the truck at the end of the day exhausted and you're like, okay, well, I guess we're going to go to bed now. And then maybe do the same thing tomorrow or start your work or whatever. Yeah. So
yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate learning a little bit about you. So everybody, it's Levi. At work, he's a registered nurse. At home, he's a father, a husband, and a hunter.